The year is roughly 30 in the Common Era. It's Passover, and everyone in the known world is gathering in Jerusalem. This normally reasonably sized city has more than quadrupled in size over the last few days, with more and more pilgrims streaming in every hour to celebrate the high holy day in this holiest of cities is everyone's hope. Passover, the feast where the people celebrate and commemorate their ancient victory over Egypt and slavery. This year, as with the previous 3 or 4 decades, Passover is celebrated hesitantly, quietly. This year, as with the previous years of Passover celebrations, Jerusalem lies heavy under the shadow of Roman occupation, at the mercy of Roman emperors and their legions of soldiers. Celebrating Passover, especially celebrating it in an occupied land, is a subversive act. But even the shadow of Rome cannot temper the excitement of a city swelling with pilgrims, ready to celebrate this ancient victory. And in all likelihood, neither can Rome squash the quietly whispered prayers that this will be the year when God reenacts the Exodus and liberates the people from their enslavement. Slowly but surely, the people begin to gather at the Western Gate. The annual triumphal entry is scheduled for later today, and while it happens every year, it still draws a crowd. The crowd is there, half out of obligation, forced by a Roman governor known for his brutality, and half there out of curiosity at the show, interested in ogling the legions of soldiers who accompany the governor. Because this weekend, the weekend before the day of Passover, Governor Pilate will clang and clash his imperial way into Jerusalem on his way into town from the coastal residence in the west, accompanied by his legions who rule by force, coercion, and terror. He comes in all of his imperial majesty to remind the Jewish pilgrims that Rome demands their complete loyalty. People can commemorate the ancient victory over Egypt and slavery all they want. But if they try any actual resistance during the Feast of Passover, it will be obliterated by the legions of soldiers. Over on the other side of the city, another crowd is gathering. They've heard rumors that the teacher and miracle worker is on his way into the city from Bethany. Everyone knows about him by now, this Jesus from Nazareth. And there's talk that he might be the one who God has sent, the anointed one, the Christ who would finally lead the people to overthrow the Roman legions despite their military might. And they can all just picture it. The mighty Jesus riding into the city in majesty with all of the peasant soldiers he's been collecting all over the countryside, ready to give the Romans a run for their money. Slowly, the crowd gathers with expectation, holding their breath, waiting. And then we start to hear the joyful shouts, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." And then we see them, a small but growing parade of ragtag men and women and a man riding on a donkey. Riding on a donkey? In contrast to Pilate's grand entry, Jesus and his disciples must have looked absurd. Defenseless, riding on a donkey. Instead of projecting power and might, Jesus is broadcasting love, humility, and sacrifice. And before the end of the week, as we just read together in our second gospel this morning, he'll be dead. Today, Palm Sunday, is a Sunday full of what a colleague calls theological whiplash. In the reading of the Gospel of the Palms and then the Gospel of the Passion, we jump suddenly from parade to persecution. The hope of Jesus' triumphant entry meets the despair of the crucifixion. And that's the point of today, this Sunday that we call Palm and Passion Sunday. This dissonance, because this paradox is what's at the heart of our faith. More than any other day, this festive, ominous, and complicated day of a parade of palms warns us that paradox is woven right into the fabric of our faith. God on a donkey, dying to live, a suffering king. Good Friday. And so today, on Palm and Passion Sunday, we enter the story of a God who comes to die so that we can live. We got a full taste of it this morning, so that we might fully journey bit by bit through this week, landing in the upper room with Jesus and his disciples on Maundy Thursday, where we encounter the paradox of Jesus' leadership that is the model for all of us to follow in our Christian journeys. The model of servanthood, of putting aside glory and seeking to see God in each person around us. And then on the Friday of death that we call good, where we dwell at the foot of the cross, when the well of despair, of broken expectation seems so big that all is darkness and mourning. And we encounter the despair and hope that intertwine in the story of the God who dies so that we can live. Today, we enter Holy Week. We journey with Jesus, both then and now, across time and space, the way of the cross, itching to find life. We hold our palms in hope and in despair, realizing that the paradox of humanity and faith gives us both, but trusting that in the end, life triumphs and the sting of death is extinguished. We dwell in this tension throughout this journey of Holy Week, when we gather together on Maundy Thursday and remember a simple meal of bread and wine transformed, and when we will gather together on Good Friday as we travel the way of the cross, together saying, "Blessed is the one who comes to die so that we will live." Amen.